which we operate. The fundamental driver for our programme is not philanthropy. And we're not here to criticise philanthropy or say that there's anything wrong with it, but we have learned over many years of running effective programmes that where the business need is aligned with the community need and what we commit to and involve ourselves in, where that need is closely matched, the outcome is better and more sustainable in the longer term. So it's very much a business-driven programme, sustaining health and continuing operations in the communities in which we operate. It's always been thus, and there have been times when people have tried to take the programme in a more philanthropic direction, and we've had internal discussions that said, no, you know, that doesn't feel right. That doesn't feel like the long-term road to what we are trying to achieve here. So it's been pulled back, and this is a feature of many Shell corporate social responsibility programs. They're very aligned with our business and how we run our business because we feel that's the right solution in the longer term. I would say the biggest piece of learning over the last 8 or 9 years is that we've introduced a degree of risk focus to the activity. So if I look back in time to the original design of the program, it was very much, if you like, and I'm being a bit simplistic here, but essentially it was a one-size-fits-all program. And the design of the program was such that there was a roadmap and that over a period of about 5 years, you were expected to go from risk assessment through early education and awareness of the workforce through training, testing, treatment where appropriate, onto then monitoring of effectiveness and evaluation. And this was a very simple sort of five-step sequential program. And the vision was that basically the entire world would follow this sequence of action. And as a methodology, as a roadmap, it was very sound. And for the countries in sub-Saharan Africa with the most profound impact, it's a very solid program, and there's nothing wrong with it. However, what we came to realise that, in fact, many countries who were not so impacted with much lower prevalence rates of HIV infection didn't require that intensity of energy and effort from the company. So the programme has evolved somewhat, and it has more of a risk focus. And the focus now very much is on saying, well, where is the greatest potential impact to our people and our operations? And that's a product of the prevalence of the HIV infection in the country of operation. It's a product of the materiality of that country to the Royal Dutch Shell Group. As I said earlier, the business-driven priority of the programme is paramount to us. And finally, it's a product of what do people do in their activity, and particularly in their work activity, that might place them at an increased risk. So let me just explain that. There are some activities which we know by virtue of individual behaviours and choices people make may place them at higher risk for HIV infection. So one such activity that we're aware of is transport and distribution networks. And people who, for example, work on some of our distribution networks in parts of Africa driving tankers. That's a well-recognised industry for people being separated from home, normal networks of society and support, making lifestyle choices that place them at risk of HIV infection. So in making our risk assessment of where do we focus our risk, our energy and our skills, we look at all of these factors which drive the risk. And we therefore get to a tiered approach to our HIV programme. It's something we've been doing for 2 years now. I would say we're pleased with the results to this point. It very much sees us focusing on our Tier 3 countries, which for us are in western parts of Africa, Nigeria, Cameroon, Gabon, Côte d'Ivoire, countries of that nature. It really helps us to say, well, look, this is where we must focus our energy and our intensity and find the right partnerships to have the right impact with our programme. The other countries are not forgotten about, of course, but we tailor back the response and we go with a more proportionate effort and intensity in terms of the programme. The main difference, I would say, between those Tier 3 countries I've just mentioned is that we put quite a degree of intensity into partnerships with people like Family Health International. And there's a sustain. We try to achieve a real sustainability to the programmes around evaluation, training, education and testing through a monitoring and evaluation programme. And that's something perhaps the Family International people can speak to as part of the overall presentation this afternoon. The pillars of our programme, I think, are also something I just want to talk to. And whenever you put any programme together, you'll find yourself challenged at different points and pulled in different directions. And it's always good to have something that you really believe in to come back to. And for us, the three pillars of our HIV programme are these. The first one is that we will not discriminate against people who work for us on the basis of their HIV status. We don't want to know what their HIV status is. We don't ask people what their HIV status is. And it would not make any material difference to their employment status with us, whether it's positive or negative. And that's a fundamental building block of fair treatment of people in the workplace. The second thing is that people who work for us will have access to education and information in the course of their work. And one of the reasons for that being a pillar is that the workplace has been shown to be a fundamentally effective place to do health education and wellness and promotion. So many of the same material that might be presented by a national government, federal government, state government, whatever, or an NGO, may not have the same effectiveness if it's presented outside the workplace that it can have if it's presented in the workplace. The reasons for that are multiple and complex, but they're compelling, and therefore I think one of the duties of any responsible employer is actually to use that position of advantage and lever it to educate and the workforce. The final pillar of our programme is that where treatment cannot and is not provided by a local health authority, government or other vehicle, that Shell will fill that gap. And that means that we will provide HIV treatment to our employees and their families if it is not available from other means and other mechanisms. And that's a substantial commitment on our part. It's one that we take on and we deliver against. When we divest assets, it's one we have to hand over to the purchasers of those assets. And that's a challenging issue, as you can imagine. But they're the three pillars, and we come back to those pillars in terms of the overall design of the programme. In execution, what I want to say is that we recognise that, you know, Royal Dutch Shell is an integrated energy company. It's not a healthcare company. It employs a big health organisation, but we're not a healthcare company. And we don't seek to differentiate ourselves as a healthcare company. We seek to excel at the delivery of energy for the world's needs. So our challenge is to find people to partner with and to work with the right people in society to deliver healthcare needs that help us deliver our business objectives. So that means we don't set up and run our own programs in isolation of anything that's going on locally, whether that's done at a federal or a state level. So that brings me on to partnerships. And you know, one of the things I'm pleased that we have a chance to talk about this afternoon is the way that we like to work, which is to find the right people to partner with when you put together something of this nature, because we know that we can't do it on our own. And success for us means finding the right people to work with. We've worked with FHI very successfully on the project you're going to hear about shortly. But there are other partners, of course. In the NIDAR project that we're talking about, we work closely with Nigerian both state and federal authorities. The National AIDS Coalition in Nigeria were fundamental, as well as the state health authorities, to helping us put the programme together. And actually finding these partnerships and then leveraging the strengths of each of the partners to get to the right place is actually what makes these things successful. And I guess we learn all the time about how to do that better and more effectively than we've been able to do it, perhaps, in some parts of the world at some times. The words I often use for what role do we like to play, I often think of the role of a multinational like Shell in this sort of discussion as one of being the catalyst that makes conversations, discussions, interfaces. It makes those things happen when they might not otherwise happen. You know, we have a big network of people. How we get things done involves us having a group of stakeholders. And actually, one of the things we can do is bring those stakeholders together and get them to have conversations that might not otherwise happen. So I think one of our roles is fundamentally to act as a catalyst, to use our network, to use some of our business skills to our advantage to deliver on our commitments that we make to our people around HIV and the HIV programs. So with that, I'm going to stop. I think it's more important than that we talk about this particular program as an example of how it can work. And so I'll hand it back to Jennifer, and we'll listen to the story about the NIDAR program.
Great. Thanks very much. I think we'll just turn right over to...
Thank you, Jennifer. Delighted to be here. Thank you for giving us a little time to talk about this exciting partnership and the work that's going on in Nigeria. And I do think it can be representative of how one works in partnership to get things done. I'm not going to spend a lot of time. You really want to hear from Dr. Christoph Hamelman, who is our country director in Nigeria and knows all about this project. But what I wanted to do was just give you a very brief overview of FHI, And basically, you see here the range of topics that we're going to cover. I'm going to give you the overview, and then Dr. Hamelman will proceed with the profile on Nigeria, talk about FHI in Nigeria, and then get specifically into the situation on the ground and what's happening with the NIDAR program. So very quickly, Family Health has a mission of improving lives worldwide through the synergistic strengths of research and programs in health. Now, that's very complicated, perhaps. Let me tell you what we actually do. We do a wide range of research. Basically, we are developing knowledge through sophisticated research designs, whether it be in economics, operations research, behavioral science. We try to understand why people do what they do, why they spend their money where they do, how we can deliver programs more effectively. And we also like to determine how we can prevent disease or various conditions, anything from certainly reproductive health, family planning, through the prevention of HIV. So we are asking questions, generating knowledge, and then we apply the knowledge that we generate in developing programs that are effective, evidence-based programs for healthcare intervention, and not just healthcare intervention, but moving right into development. And we believe that there is a great linkage between health and development. So that's what we do in essence. We don't only use our knowledge. We obviously look at the knowledge in the world and learn best practices and implement them all over the world. And we've got a wide range of areas that we work in: HIV, reproductive health, malaria, tuberculosis, and the list goes on, even getting into cardiovascular disease and other infectious and chronic diseases, and as I said, development, and also health system strengthening. You might say, why all these diseases? Well, the reality is we have a platform, we have an understanding, and the understanding is a part of the platform. We have a presence. We've got leadership that understands how things work in the developing world. And more importantly, we know how to work in partnership with governments and academic institutions and health institutions. It's all about partnerships. And we have epidemiologists and physicians and biochemists and pharmacologists and health economists and so on and so forth. We have people that can deal with health and development questions and delivery. And we see HIV, obviously, as a devastating disease, but we are seeing more and more how important it is to capitalize on the funding that's available to deal with HIV and transfer the value of that to other issues in the healthcare system. Health system strengthening is being talked about all over. If we don't do health system strengthening with our HIV interventions, we've got a big problem. In fact, we wouldn't be able to do what we've been doing, and I think some of what we're going to talk about in the NIDAR program is indicative of that as well. Moving on quickly, we have a global presence. That's part of our platform. Too much detail on here. I don't want you to try to read that. We've got about 2,500 people around the world. We've been around working in the developing world for now close to 40 years. We've got 65 offices in about 35 different countries around the world, primarily focused in Africa and Asia, dealing with the topics that I was speaking about before. How do we do it? Well, we do it with funding from various sources, certainly government sources, U.S. government sources extensively, certainly USAID, CDC, NIH, et cetera, other governments, as well as multiple private sources, foundations, all the way through to private donors. And then, of course, we do a lot of work with commercial companies as well in partnership. We believe that while historically, many of us working in NGOs may have felt that the commercial entities weren't really the right ones to bring into the tent. We believe that for success, we must drive partnerships. For sustainability, and we heard that again and again with Rob, sustainability is really critical to what we're doing. We cannot deal with the challenges of the world purely through a philanthropic model. So we work with multiple partnerships. These are some of the main ones, but obviously we work with hundreds of partners on the ground in whatever countries we're working with, community-based organizations, faith-based organizations. We probably work with 250 to 300 faith-based organizations all over the world. They're the people many times that have the medical personnel on the ground, and we work with them in partnership to implement so many of these interventions. So it's all about partnership, and we're so proud to be able to work with Shell and so many others as well. And with that, I think I'll just hand off to Dr. Hamelman, unless there's some specific – I don't know how you want to handle this.
Okay.
Just go through it.
Yeah. Come back and
very good.
Ask questions. Yeah.
Dr. Hamelman.
Good. Thank you very much. Good afternoon. Before I proceed, I would like to acknowledge the presence of Dr. Fakunle, my colleague and friend on this project. Tunde, feel free to feed in information while we are moving on. To assist in such a project, first of all, the most important thing is that you know your environment. So I will start with a few notes about the profile of Nigeria, particularly as far as some of the health indicators are concerned. The public health environment is quite challenging in Nigeria. We have about a zero prevalence among pregnant women of 4.6%. There's an estimated 2.9 million people living with HIV in Nigeria, which makes Nigeria actually the third largest population of people living with HIV and AIDS after India and South Africa. In tuberculosis, we have the fourth highest burden of tuberculosis in Nigeria, according to World Health Organization report. Reproductive health, the total fertility rate is 5.7. We have a very low contraceptive prevalence in Nigeria, and malaria is rampant, is an endemic, with estimated 300,000 deaths annually. Let us move back to those ones. We have about 140 million people in Nigeria, so Nigeria has the largest population of all African countries. Median age is 17 years. And most of you working in this area know that when we talk about achieving Millennium Development Goals for the continent, Nigeria is a key country just from the size. It has a federal system with 36 states, 774 local government areas. The oil dependency is well known. Besides the richness of resources, we have roughly 50% of the population is living on a daily income or resource of less than $1. And the states and the LGAs depend heavily in their operations on federal funds. We have a very high maternal mortality with 1,100 women per 100,000 live births. The infant mortality, so mortality under one, children under 1 year, is about 100 per 1,000 live births, and the under five mortality is 197 per 1,000 live births. So overall, Nigeria is well behind in the moment in catching up with the Millennium Development targets. I spoke already to the HIV and malaria situation. Moving on to the finance, public health financing, government spends currently about 3.5% of the total budget on health care, which is the second lowest in Africa. At the same time, mainly because public sector health services are so bad, a lot of money is spent on direct pocket from the population on health in the private sector. We have significant donor funding, but mainly for vertical or now called global health initiative programs, mainly HIV/AIDS, malaria, and TB. And all this volume which is going into those global health initiatives is basically facing quite a weak system on the health side. Now, to handle our operations in Nigeria, our project is operating, our program is, sorry, there's always a back and forth here on those pages, so I'm getting lost. So moving to FHI in Nigeria, we started in Nigeria in 1988, so we are on the ground over 20 years, and we started coming from family planning and sexual reproductive health. And you can see over the years that the project greatly diversified, coming now in 2008, 2009. We basically cover all the main global health initiatives, HIV, TB, malaria, sexual reproductive health. But we have also heavily invested in our capacity in dealing with health systems issues. So we move from single disease programs to multiple disease programs to global health initiatives, to global health initiatives integrated into health system strengthening work. And this can only happen due to also a diversification of our funding and funder portfolio. Of course, our main funder is USAID. Over the years, we have received funds from the British government. Now more and more funding is coming in from the Global Fund, some other foundations, and also partnerships with the private sector, like with Shell. Now, to handle such operations, we are working in Nigeria from 11 offices plus a country office. We are covering all the 36 states in Nigeria. So each zonal office, as we call it, has operations with three or four states. We are, I think, the only health sector, international health sector organization in Nigeria, which has really brought nationwide coverage. The next slide shows you what it means to handle such operations. So we are really operating in all the states with a multitude of health facilities, from tertiary health facilities, secondary health facilities, primary health facilities. Meanwhile, more than 400 facilities all around the country. Most of them, we support them in comprehensive services. So we do not longer individual services like specific HIV services or even components of HIV services, but we support those facilities in all major disease areas. Now, talking about system, the system component and sustainability, just as a reminder in terms of what system components we deal with in the health sector, this one here is from WHO, the health systems building blocks, which are currently, I think, widely acknowledged as the basis, talking about health system strengthening as components. So we are engaged in all those six components you see, and you will see later on that particularly the NIDA project builds on that expertise in most of those building blocks. Now, in terms of our whole country program, meanwhile, after 3 or 4 years working with PEPFAR and Global Fund, you can see that outputs from such a program are quite impressive. Actually, the FHI program in Nigeria, particularly the GAIN project, which is the Global HIV-AIDS Initiative funded by PEPFAR, is the largest worldwide, single largest PEPFAR program. We are operating with everything what we do in Nigeria roughly on the volume of 80 to 90 million US dollars annually, taking into account all the various funding sources. Moving on to just to give you some brief idea in terms of the components we are working in. On the health workforce side, we are one of the largest organizations building capacity and training of healthcare workers in Nigeria on all the various disease components. And the impact is really quite substantial, particularly from the relatively low starting point you are starting to operate in Nigeria in terms of quality improvement, motivation of staff. The next one is on financing infrastructure. Nigeria has really, due to the history, mainly with the military rules, but even after the return to democracy, has still a lot of difficulties really to build up a primary health care system. What you see on the first picture is what you is not, let's say, just a rare event. You find a lot of health facilities who look like this on primary health care level, where access, particularly after raining, is extremely difficult. But even the substance of the buildings, they look like this. When you want to work in such a setting, you need to address infrastructure issues. The picture below is rather the other extreme, that in addition to supporting really large-scale primary health care system strengthening or district hospital strengthening, we are also engaged in more high-tech end of the service range activities, like, for example, in MDR-TB. The picture you see is the first BSL-3 laboratory in Nigeria dealing with multi-drug resistance TB. The next one, we are engaged in medical products technology, so we do a lot of supply chain management, procurement, distribution, in support to government. Most of the global health initiatives, as you know, these days, they have a high throughput of health commodities, medicines, and laboratory reagents. We are a major partner for the government and health information systems in Nigeria, both paper-based and electronically, with particularly with monthly health statistics coming from all these health facilities and feeding through the whole data flow to district administration, to state administration, to federal system. Now moving... Yeah, if you move one forward, that one ahead. Governance and leadership is the last building block. This slide on top was really lying there in the ground, is a typical example from Nigerian history. There were always phases under the various military rulers, where particularly with petroleum money, certain institutions were being put up to spend for a certain while quite huge amounts on education or on the health sector. And when the next ruler would come in, that institution would somehow rather die off because it was declared as being not really accountable and transparent with their dealings before. So there was never a kind of continuation of system building in the health sector in Nigeria. So one of the great efforts we are doing is really to work with people who are drivers of change in the leadership section, in civil society, faith-based organizations, in professional societies, other stakeholders in government. Good. This is the environment, and some of us who are attending currently have attended the Global Business Coalition annual conference, you might know that in between was always the call, okay, with whom should business partner, because the challenge is to work in such an environment and really deliver on expectations from whatever philosophy or company mission it might or vision it might come. Where is the capacity available to do that one, and to do that in an area like, for example, the Niger Delta? So just to give you some idea about where this project, the NIDA project, is situated as the collaboration between Shell and FHI. The Niger Delta, of course, is, as you know, the area in Nigeria where most of the oil and gas is available. But at the same time, it's chronically known also among Nigerians as not a very well-developed area for the communities living there. You have heard a lot from the Niger Delta in terms of the security situation. So it poses quite some challenges for an organization like ours, or also for companies working there, to operate in this area. So in view of bilateral health programs, there, if you see usually in Nigeria quite an engagement from various governments in the health sector, educational sector, agriculture, so forth. There are not many of us really working in the NIDA Delta and engaging there because of those factors I mentioned. Next slide, please. The Niger Delta is in the south-south zone from Nigeria, has a population of 30 million, so roughly 23% of the country in total. And you can notice from the slide that the HIV prevalence is substantially higher in the Niger Delta than in the average of the country. And Rob has mentioned a few of those reasons why it is in that way. So in this part, which covers 23% of the population, we have about 1 million people living with HIV, and the need for treatment among those people for ART is about 150,000. The goal of the NIDA project was, it is not a workplace program. It's a program working in the communities. And Shell Nigeria has done a lot of effort working with the communities from various perspectives. Now, this one had the perspective not to be directly engaged on the front side, but rather using an organization like Family Health International with the expertise, but also in terms of somehow being a neutral player in this area, to come in and to improve the services, health services of five facilities. Cottage hospitals, which belong basically from their type of facility to the primary health care system, although they are in the upper range, so closely to district hospital. And the main focus of this project was to introduce in those cottage hospitals HIV and TB services. There was hardly in this whole area, in the five states where this project was operating, there was hardly any facility at that point in time which would provide those services. So people had really distances of a couple of hundred kilometers to cover to attend to life-saving services like ARV services. So the hospitals are relatively small, bed capacity of 23. You can see a few of those statistics. Just to give you the idea that it is not a large-scale project. It was really, at this stage, was the attempt in an area which is really difficult to work with, and where every day when you are in Nigeria and you read the newspaper, you basically get every day negative or headlines, really to set an example for hope that it can be done differently. And it can be done in a way that services actually improve for the local population. The accomplishments of the project during the period from May to October 2008, the key principle really of this project is community participation. And to handle community participation, you need to engage the local community, you need to engage the local leaders of the community, you need to engage the local government, you need to engage the state government to be really accepted. You work in an environment where, although people have not access to services, you might find from time to time that when you come and you assist for trainings or for upgrades of in service areas, that people ask you for money, that those people you are training and you feel you provide input, that they ask you for money, otherwise they would not attend services. So that gives you somehow an idea of how difficult community work is. But this project achieved to address over 10,000 people on HIV and AIDS information. It had great success despite existing stigmatization in the community to engage people and open up and provide testing services. So,
is this, I'm sorry, directed at employees primarily?
No, is the general population. Yeah? So this is not a workplace program. This is a community program. So it's the general population attending those services. And I think Shell is supporting in the Niger Delta 27 of those cottage hospitals in general, but was asking us to work with them together to upgrade the services of those cottage hospitals, particularly for HIV and AIDS, because those services were previously not existing. So meanwhile, in those cottage hospitals, or by end of October last year, there were also 381 patients receiving ART treatment, which was about 65% of all people who registered for chronic care in those facilities. Now, on the next slide, we can briefly see from the information system we are introducing, we do also GIS mapping, we do analysis in terms of where do patients come from, because when you deal with a chronic disease, with ARV treatment, obviously adherence is an important thing. The question, how far need people to travel to come forward to a site to get their regular medication in such an environment is an important issue. Now, I was saying that initially before the project started, there people had to travel distances of more than 200 kilometers to get to treatment sites. This is an example of one of the states we worked together. This is Abia State. The circle shows in the center the one of the cottage hospitals, and the average distance for those patients now was 32 kilometers, which is still quite a long way to cover. There's no tube station. There's no highway, so it really takes time to cover those, even those 32 kilometers. I think on the capacity building side for health workers, this project has made major progress. We had just recently a joint assessment of those facilities, and one of the key issues which really comes out that this improvement and additional input to the facility has really motivated and changed some of the attitude of the health workers who work for their communities to provide services. Infrastructure upgrade, of course, I was mentioning that already, is an important aspect. The whole supply chain management, and to deal with the supply chain management in such an environment is a story in itself, because of course, commodities have values that disappear from the facilities. They find their way into other markets. So to have a proper system in place which is functioning in such an environment is quite an important success. And the last point, to come back basically to the first point, is the issue of leadership and governance. Together in our partnership, I think we have achieved through establishment of certain fora, like a hospital advisory committee, where all the states and the facilities were represented and were basically structuring, planning, and evaluating the project over time by themselves under facilitation from Shell and FHI. This engagement of the local leadership, I think, is and was essential for the progress of this program. Now, putting that one into context now under the aspect of transition and sustainability, that is always an important question when you come to the end of your presentation here now, and when you are now leaving, what is then happening? And I think this project has really clearly made a point on this, because we are now presenting, although this project has ended in October, and we have done in May an assessment how those facilities are now faring, and the assessment was very successful. Those services are still existing, they are actually further proceeding. But the main issue in our debate is because it was a partnership not only between Shell and FHI, but because these two partners had the same vision and philosophy how to deal with the local community and how to embed the project in the Nigerian system. We had made early provisions together with the states and with the federal government about what comes after the engagement, initial engagement, which was mainly funded by a private company. And the solution to that one was that government decided, okay, we are ready if the company, if there's a private company and there's an international organization which provides a lot of technical input and a private company which takes over initially quite a lot of capital investment, training, system strengthening, we are ready then to take over at a certain point in time and integrate that project into our health efforts. So coming together at that point in time is Global Fund, because the Global Fund is supporting in Nigeria together with USAID and other partners, the government, the National Agency for the Control of AIDS and other bodies. So using those funds, those sites, they are now after this transition assessment, those sites will be slotted over into government support with partial funding from the government, federal, from the states, but also partial funding from the Global Fund. And if we come to the last slide, this man was also very influential in moving with us together on this project straight from the beginning. When the project started, he was the director general from the National Agency for the Control of AIDS, Professor Babatunde Oshotemin. He is now, of course, the Minister of Health, and he was part of the project. He has guided the project, has supported the work together with the states in the Niger Delta, and of course now as a very prominent figure in the cabinet from the president, he very well knows how important it is for an area like the Niger Delta, not only for the national scene but also for the international scene, to enlighten the at least one signal of hope. And I think this project has achieved that one in the collaboration between Shell, FHI, and the government from Nigeria. Thank you very much.
Thank you all three for a very good overview. I guess we'll open it up for questions. On the sustainability issue, I mean, if I understood you, as when once Shell has put in the capital and FHI has set the programming, then the government will kind of take over and incorporate it into a kind of take ownership of the program. And to me, that's a little, I mean, troubling in some ways. I mean, it's particularly if you're talking of a government that's investing 3.9% into the healthcare system, and I wonder how that commitment then gets followed up on, or does this kind of trail away into something? Particularly when you're talking, I'm not sure if they take over the facility, but also the kind of supply chain management. I'd like to hear a bit more about that issue as well, which is problematic in so many countries. So kind of a little bit more on the sustainability issue, and that goes to the question of what do you think are the broader trend lines in Nigeria in terms of investing in health? Has that been pretty? I mean, the Abuja Declaration calls for 15% signed in Nigeria's capital. It's pretty alarming that Nigeria is second last in Africa in investing in health. We can take a couple if we want to. Should we take a couple of questions at a time, or why don't you go on with that one? I mean, that's a couple of questions together. Maybe we'll go with that. Or Deirdre.
I just under your who has FHI been addressing in the government? I mean, there is the NDDC, there is DSOPADEC and EDOSOPADEC and the other state-funded development organizations. There's the state ministries of health. There's the federal ministry of health. Who, which of these agencies do you think might be taking over? There is even the Niger Delta ministry now. So the government is a many-sided thing.
Alonzo Wind, USAID Nigeria. Given the context of the NIDER project within the substantial PEPFAR program in Nigeria, which is one of the three largest in the world, how do you see this project as a pilot? I'm interested in FHI's point of view, but also Shell's point of view. It sounds like you were working in only several major health centers or smaller hospitals, as you say, cottage hospitals, basically one in each of the several states, it looks like. Do you think that that really represented a model that could be adopted or looked at by the state governments as a pilot to be replicable? Or would you see Shell funding perhaps something on a more ambitious level that would allow state governments and local governments to really build on the NIDAR experience?
So thanks. I'm going to pick up parts of different parts of those questions. I think it's fundamental that you talk about the sustainability of the project, because that is what I think is, in a sense, we set out to try and do differently with this project to what we've done in the past. So Shell has a long history of working in Nigeria and a long history of supporting community health programs in different shapes or guises. Now, to be very simplistic about it, historically, it's often been the injection of capital to build infrastructure. Anybody who spends time in Nigeria can tell you that one of the things that happens to these facilities is that fairly rapidly the infrastructure deteriorates because there isn't a mechanism to support that infrastructure and for it to continue to develop and provide the services you would wish it to develop. So I think in actually putting this project together, there was an intent at the outset to say, well, how could it be different? And what I think is different is that there was this attempt to connect different stakeholders and players. So Shell had a footprint in these five different states, and that's why they were chosen. There was a connection to the local state health authorities, but there was a specific effort to build capacity, so that was different. There was a specific effort to develop staff with competence that would be employed by the local state health authority and therefore deliver that capacity. So there was a set out to... The intent from the outset was not just to put a new roof on the clinic, because in a sense, that's kind of an easy, cheap shot for us to do, right? We can do that. But does it make any difference 2 years down the track if there's no competent staff on the ground delivering healthcare? Well, the answer is no. So a deliberate intent from the outset to put together some capacity building, some infrastructure and some resource. Providing healthcare to the Nigerian population fundamentally isn't Shell's task. I mean, let's be quite clear about that. It's not our task to deliver healthcare to the Nigerian population. But we can play a role, and I go back to the word I used at the beginning of the presentation, which was about us being a catalyst that might bring different people together to make things happen that would not otherwise happen. And that, I think, is the role that we've sought to play here. So in terms of, engaging people, as Christoph said, one of the key things was actually getting different elements of the government, whether state or federal, together. And the current Minister of State for Health for Nigeria was fundamental, and he was based in the Delta at the time. He was fundamental in saying, well, we'll take on a commitment that once these things are up and running, they can then become facilities that we will run and maintain, and that is their commitment. Now, how long that commitment lasts and what it looks like, well, that remains to be seen. I'll be quite candid about that. But I think also one of the roles that FHI have been able to play is, again, connecting the dots of different players and different networks. So PEPFAR, Global Fund, and securing this long-term funding for these projects and programs and community clinics and facilities that might not otherwise be there. So that was what we have attempted to do. Now, to what extent, to answer your question, is it a model? Could it be a model for elsewhere? Is it a scalable model? Well, I think it certainly has potential. I think it's a more aggressive and ambitious agenda than I've seen elsewhere. I think the ambitious part for a company like Shell, frankly, is to say, well, we'll make it our business to try and actually tackle some of these very difficult community issues, and we'll play a role in that. So we're actually, you know, we're proud of that, but we recognise it's extremely difficult. But could it be a model? Yes, absolutely. Why not? Because, again, what we're doing is connecting different partners, different stakeholders, pulling them together and saying, well, actually, guys, here's issues. And here's ways that you can actually work together to provide a sustainable vehicle for healthcare in these difficult environments. So I think it can be a model. I think it could be repeated. It could be used elsewhere. It would rely on funding and multiple sources of funding. Some of that's private sector. Some of that's federal and state. Some of it may well be from the third parties from overseas, including PEPFAR and Global Fund. Christoph, I don't know if you wanted to add to any of that.
To address one of your questions and from others in terms of how can one work with a government or a state which makes commitments for health funding to this amount and is then in reality putting on the table that amount. There are quite a number of different approaches to that one. When you work in the country, you take the approach from inside and you ask yourself, okay, how do you move a country which has that problem? How do you move that country forward that this problem becomes smaller? And you start, when you work in the whole country, you start to realize that that is not even only a simple question and strategy setting on federal level. It basically means you need to engage with every single state, because at the end of the day it's the governor who is holding the money and who will make the decision whether whatever money came from federal as distribution to that state is really spent in a way it is supposed to be or not. So further to your question, that means when you now go to a level like cottage hospitals, which are under the local government administration, you need to engage with the local government. So it really means you can influence that process and you can make up your mind while you are moving on this process under the strategy of hope whether your hope is justified. And you will see from time to time, and quite often, you will see frustrations. And you will see that maybe that state where you thought there are now drivers there, oh, there are changes, or they are driving backwards. But you try, in a diverse country like this, you are trying to work with the drivers. You are not wasting your time to hang on and always complain why are things in the way in some of the states as they are. There are enough drivers in Nigeria. Nigeria is a huge population. If you look here to Washington, if you look to other European countries, how many Nigerians are around which are highly qualified and can contribute? And there are plenty of them in Nigeria. And they really want to move the things. And if you have a situation like in the moment that you have, even in the Ministry of Health now, a minister who has really proven the case in his previous position that he wants to drive things. You are starting rather the other way around and you are asking yourself, if you would now in such a system be the minister, what tools do you have in hand and how can you be supported by the international community? What tools do you have in hand in this own environment of yours with the cabinet, with all the political players on federal and state level, what tools do you have in place to make a difference? And it's not very easy. And if you have drivers like this one in historic situation, I can only recommend to support them and to build up that trust that you still observe whether they really are up to the task, but support them so that they can actually move the hurdle from 3.1% in the next year maybe to 4.5 or to 5%. And that you have, instead of one or two states where you have governors which deal with the matter in a different way, in the next year you might have three or four or five. So it's not the quantum leap which you make within 1 year. It's more this constant working contacts and so forth.
Jennifer, will you allow me just to follow up with one question? And that is, I understand and that this phase of the program is coming to an end in October, but I think one of the things we'd like to know is that is FHI still going to be monitoring these five cottage hospitals, or how is Shell SPDC going to continue to monitor the program? Who's going to be reporting on the outcome and the results after October? I'm sure there'll be a funding stream still to the cottage hospitals from SPDC, because there is to all of their 27 hospitals. And there'll be a funding stream from the state governments, because that's standard also, although it's not a very large stream. But who's going to be watching this program?
Okay. You can. My name is Ruth Mufuti. I'm from Africa. Since 2004, Africa has partnered with Shell in implementing a malaria integration project called HIP. I wanted to find out whether Shell sees any synergies between this malaria project and the NIDA project that you're implementing again in the Niger Delta.
I'm Tina Stanton with Mitsubishi International, and I actually have a question about the Shell programs as well. I'm curious, with the business-first model that Shell is so frank about, how has that been received in industry globally, and particularly among African nations in the healthcare industry, because it's such a large industry globally, healthcare in Africa?
I take briefly the monitoring aspect, and then Rob will address the more important broader issues. All the technical capacity building of the sites was according to national guidelines and systems. So also the M&E system which we have employed is the national M&E system. We still have, as you are rightly saying, we still have mechanisms in place. That project ended in October 2008. Yeah? But it has a transition period, because basically we were, as partners, we were putting up that hurdle of the transition period ourselves. We were saying, we do not want to have this project slotted into something else if we are not sure as partners what we have built up is surviving a transition period where it is basically needs to show and demonstrate it can run on their own legs. So we had now, from end of October 2008 until now June, a period where the main project activities were closed. The new, let's say, funding support through the Global Fund was put on hold based on certain criteria we had set, which the sites need to, and the states and the local government administration need to prove the case that the support is there to keep the sites at least operating on that level as we left them with the project in October 2008. And that assessment was recently done. That still includes, is still not the normal situation, if you want to have it like this, because that those cottage hospitals, as you're rightly saying, belong to the 27 cottage hospitals which receive some support from Shell in a general way. So that is still a bit more than a normal health facility would have. Yeah? So now in this transition period, the sites had to provide on a monthly basis their statistics and their performance indicators. And they were sent to Dr. Fakunle, and they were sent to our office, and we would review it, and we would provide a feedback, just a feedback. We would tell them, okay, that is what we see from the data, and we would advise, look into this and this and this and this. So that is how it works.
So how did they do?
They were doing actually fairly well.
Can I maybe pick up the two questions, one around integrate and one around the Shell strategy around positioning business response to HIV? So let me toss first to the integration. Thank you for raising it. It's an excellent question. One of the evolutions of our program has been over the last 8 or 9 years, and it's true generally that you move away from doing an HIV-only program to an integrated community health program just because it makes more sense. And everybody kind of understands that now. But you know what? 10 years ago, that's exactly what people were doing. People were running HIV programs and then kind of wondering why actually this really wasn't achieving all that it might achieve. So we've learned the same lesson everyone else has learned, and we are actually seeking to put together integrated programs. And that's why, you know, these community health centers, although they have a focus on HIV, that isn't all they do. I mean, they're actually genuine community health centers, which are focal points for malaria nets, for immunization, for childhood immunization. This NIDAR project is not the only community support work we do in Nigeria. I've visited a number of clinics that Tunde took me to recently in Lagos. Fabulous little clinic facility in Lagos where children basically get vaccinated with their mothers. And that's an extension of, you know, an HIV program becoming a more holistic general community health program, because that actually just makes sense, and that's what you should do. Specifically to your question around malaria programs and integrating that with this, I haven't looked at the detail of that, but I think in terms of philosophy, it's right on track and the sort of thing that we could and should be looking at. To the question on, you know, so the business first philosophy around HIV, it's to us it makes sense that if you want something to be sustainable. And I've had this a number of times in my career in health. If you want something to be sustainable, the more closely aligned to your business objectives and your core business and what you're trying to do and what you're trying to achieve, the more likely it is to have a lifespan beyond the next change of managing director or the next change of the project manager. So one of the things that we think is important with social responsibility is actually to keep pretty close to our core business and to try and find touch points where making decisions, making investments, making contributions actually utilize our skills, our knowledge, and our capacity in a way that actually works. And therefore, what we contribute is a successful, sustainable business, and that's good for the growth of that community and that environment and that society. So they're all wise words. What might that look like? Well, a sustainable industry creates employment, it creates jobs, it creates wealth. It's that wealth that creates the money, the funding, the sourcing for health and healthcare infrastructure. One of the things we haven't talked about actually is the sort of early days industry in the health insurance world that you have in Nigeria. And we see that in Lagos, we see that in Abuja, we see it in the major cities. We don't yet see it in other parts of the country. But there are people looking at that and saying, well, that actually could become a vehicle for delivering sustainable healthcare. And breaking the cycle you have at the minute, which is of people purchasing individual items of healthcare, so when you get sick, you go buy healthcare from a private practitioner, versus actually purchasing a health insurance product. And there are innovative models that are being used in parts of Nigeria to do just that. And in fact, we're quite big purchasers of an HMO program in Nigeria. So I mean, part of the evolution that I see happening over a period of time is that, you know, Shell right now provides health services to our employees through our own facilities. We're direct providers of healthcare to our employees. Where it would be nice to get to would be through evolution of sustainable healthcare and quality healthcare facilities that we became purchasers of healthcare. That's a much more sustainable model than us providing it. But we're not there yet, and that has to change. That's what we think has to change. Now, our role in that, I mean, a lot of people look at the Pecten and say, well, there's the bankroll, right? That's how it gets paid and funded for. Well, we don't see that that's the answer. We think actually our role is to be part of a stakeholder group that works out how this could be made to happen, and we play that different role. And I, as I say, I think the NIDAR project, what we set out to do was actually do something different than just be the source of funding for the clinic group. And it was a fundamentally difficult challenge, but it set out to be different from the outset.
On some of the direct workplace interventions, you know,
Yes, we do. So, as I say, we are the primary and secondary healthcare providers to our employees in Nigeria. We do it through a number of vehicles, but primarily in our operational sites in the Delta. We do it through our clinical facilities in Warri and Port Harcourt. In Lagos, we do it through a combination of an HMO provider, Hygeia, and our own clinics and hospital and small hospital facility. So we have a big role as a provider of healthcare to our employees and dependents. And that population in total, I mean, the employees is about 4,500. And the total dependent population, 20,000 lives covered by that network and infrastructure. And, yes, HIV testing is made available through that. Tunde, I don't know if you've got figures off the top of your head you can share with us. Yeah, I mean, I've got some figures that we collected for the annual HIV report we do for the board, and just some basic stats that last year we did education awareness to 24,000 people in Shell. So that's a combination of employees and dependents. We've got 200 people that we know of that are in HIV programs, and that's globally, that's not Nigeria. But that's probably, well, that's certainly a massive underrepresentation of the true figure because we don't actually track it as a statistic in terms of we're not interested. You know, we're interested that people get access to care. We're not interested in the actual absolute numbers of people who are positive. That's not it's not a statistic we particularly track. So, I mean, it's a significant area of energy and expenditure for us. But I think increasingly the trend is to move towards managing HIV as part of an integrated healthcare program and ceasing to see it as a separate standalone program. And one of the things our managing director from Kenya is here this week, actually, and Patrick spoke this morning about the work they had done in Kenya to take HIV from being a standalone program to being one of a health and wellness program. Because one of the things you notice in developing countries where you go in, you know, and over a period of 20, 30 years, you build up the oil industry, is actually people's health, the patterns of health and illness, disease actually change. So they start to develop some Western lifestyle problems with obesity, overweight, cardiovascular risk profiles. So in fact, what they've done in Kenya is move away from the standalone HIV program, and then I have an integrated community health program, which looks at cardiovascular risk profiling, HIV, malaria, all of these component elements. And one of the benefits of that is, A, it's holistic, and it looks at all aspects of people's health. But the second advantage is, where there's any residual stigma around HIV, actually that can disappear because it gets lost in the whole. And actually what we found in Kenya was that our testing rate went from about 30% to near 100% of the workforce in Kenya because of that broadening of the scheme from HIV to total health.
Well, I just want to take the prerogative of being an old friend of someone who's sitting to my left, someone who hasn't been introduced to you. But I want to say that programs such as this only work if there is a champion in the company. And Mutu Sumonu, who is sitting next to me to my left, is a real champion for support to communities and community welfare. Many years ago, I was working with his company in Nigeria, and I went out to some communities and talked with a very boisterous group of young people in one community one day. And they said, you know, it's all well and good that Shell wants to help us start a vocational training program or a women's center, but you know what we'd really like? We want some contact with Shell people. We'd like them to come out and play football with us. We want a relationship with Shell. So I took this message back, and I gave it to all of the six operations managers at the time, and there was one who took me up on it, and that was Mutu. And Mutu went out with some of his team, and he played football with these young people in the communities around, and tremendously enhanced, I think, the relationship with his organization and the communities. And I feel very positive that he is now the managing director of Shell in Nigeria, because I think someone with that point of view will rise, and he has done so.
Could I just make a comment expanding further on, you know, what can drive sustainability? It's not just this partnership in Nigeria, but FHI in a number of locations in the world, very heavily in East Africa, actually, through our roads program funded by USAID, also the AFIA programs that we have in Kenya. Components of those projects actually incorporate developmental strategies, not only the HIV AIDS interventions in terms of testing, counseling, testing, and treatment, but the whole concept of bringing the community together. And it's really the same issue here, getting multiple sectors of the community together and helping the community with obviously the commitment of political leaders. You have to have the political will, and you have to work with community leaders and up the chain. But you have to get to a point where people realize there's something in it for them. And one of the things that's really very, very important and fundamental is business, economic stability. And we have to find ways to help people support themselves. And that's where we have remarkable responses in communities, where we get the community engaged and we get the community start generating income. And you do have to bring the insurance dynamics and microfinance and so on together, but bring it together in a consistent way. And you see dramatic responses. And there is a chance for sustainability. If it is simply philanthropy, it's not going to work. So I applaud a business strategy, and we cannot survive thinking that it's going to be donations that are going to do it, whether they're governmental foundation or individual donations that are going to make the world change. We have to stimulate a business enterprise and bring all aspects together, and that's what we're striving to do. We work with General Motors and Unilever. We've got a parts plant. We've got a mushroom
farm. We've got textile industries. These are small, but they are stimulating an environment of enterprise. And the community starts seeing there's something in it for us, for me, for us. And politicians have to see that there's something in it for them. And so it's a strategy that has been evolving over time, and we believe more and more traction is being shown, and I think this is a great example of it. But we are strong believers we cannot deal with health alone, and certainly we can't deal with HIV alone. That's not sustainable either. We have to address health comprehensively.
It's a pretty remarkable partnership, it seems, and we're looking forward to the future trajectory on it, see how this goes and how it expands and how it grabs hold within the communities. So I want to say thank you to all three speakers and to our participants for joining us. Very interesting.